med student, blogger, Instagrammer, YouTuber, self-described fitness addict, and world traveler. Let's meet today's guest, co-founder of The Med Life, Adam Goodkoff. Welcome to the 339th episode of Admissions Straight Talk, Accepted's podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you show that you both fit in at your target schools and are a standout in the applicant pool. The result? You get a message one day that causes you to jump up and down shouting, "Yes, I'm in!" And not only in, but in at the best program for you. Before I introduce our guests, I'd like to invite you to the 5-part framework for a successful medical school application, a webinar to give you the 5 critical elements of a successful app. These foundational elements are must-haves when you apply to medical school. You can register for this free webinar, which takes place December 12th at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, and you can register at accepted.com/339webinar. Our guest today, Adam Goodkoff, is a 4th-year med student, former graduate teaching fellow in anatomy, and he is also applying to emergency medicine residencies this year. He graduated the University of Albany with a bachelor's in bio, and during his sophomore year at college, he started a blog to document and share his attempts to gain acceptance to medical school. Once medical school started and time available shrank, Adam briefly switched to YouTube, which ultimately also proved to be too time-consuming. Fast forward 3 years, and he decided to launch The Med Life, a community where all healthcare providers and students could find entertaining and educational content. Adam, welcome to Admissions Straight Talk.
Thank you, Linda. I appreciate it.
All right. So can you tell us a little bit about your background, where you grew up, what you like to do for fun?
I'd be happy to. Originally grew up in upstate New York, Albany area, just north of there. Went to undergraduate at the University of Albany, and then on to a different state entirely for medical school. And for fun, I've been called like the jack of all trades. I do a million things. It's kind of like depending on my mood.
I see a bike in the background.
Yeah. There's certainly a bike, and that's downsized. I used to have like 3 or 4 different bikes for the different types of riding that I would do. So very into cycling and downhill mountain biking, things like that. I'm a huge skier. I've been to the Alps multiple times, Colorado, all of that stuff. Really love to travel, into photography as well. It's actually one of my photos from, I think that one's from Paris.
Oh, wow.
So I do a lot of, yeah, a lot of
street. Can't quite see it. But if you want to bring it over.
It's
stuck.
The wall,
okay.
Don't. I have a bunch of cool stuff from St. Martin. So really enjoy travel photography and street photography as well. And I'm always learning new stuff. I used to play in a band, so I kind of have covered the gamut and always trying new stuff.
Okay, great. How did you become interested in medicine, a career in medicine?
That's a great question. I think kind of looking back, you know, in high school, I wasn't the best student. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I just kind of wanted to hang out with my friends, to be honest. I was a big swimmer, and it was kind of understood that I would swim my way into college. And I decided that swimming wasn't for me. And so that kind of proved to be difficult to get into college. I was very fortunate that the University of Albany took me. And I kind of didn't have a huge direction. So I knew I liked medicine. I knew from my time in EMS, that's really what like jump started me into medicine.
When did you do that?
So the EMS started in the end of high school. I actually did like a short stint as like a volunteer firefighter. Did not really enjoy that. But what I found I loved was the EMS side of the fire. And so I switched to just EMS and went on and got what was called a CFR. I was actually too young to get an EMT at the time.
What's a CFR?
It's just a certified first responder.
Okay.
So yeah, if you're not 18 years old in the state of New York, you can't be an EMT. So that's what I had to do at the time. I think it was only like 16 maybe. And so I took that course and learned the basics and started to work like volunteer at my local EMS agency, and actually ended up staying in EMS for like a total of 5 years before I had actually gone on to med school. So just at the end of high school. Yeah. And then through all of college. And I did go on to get my actual EMT, New York State EMT, and ultimately was hired just before med school. So that's what really jumped kind of the interest. And in college, I was like, hey, I enjoy EMS. Maybe I should look at doing medicine. And that always just kind of, it snowballed, you know, things happened very quickly in college. And so I felt like I had to make a decision, and I was like, well, medicine seems like a good option. And then it just kind of over time, I was like, wow, I made the right decision for me. You know, and obviously now, as I'm sure we'll get into, that's ultimately what I'm kind of pursuing.
That's great. Yeah, we will get into it. Now, did you go straight from college to medical school?
I did, yeah. I didn't take a gap year. I don't know, and based on what you prefer, we can get into how nitty-gritty about my application. But yeah, I was relatively competitive, and I did not want to take a gap. I knew, you know, the student that I am now isn't the student even that I was when I was applying to medical school, let alone applying to college. So I was very worried that if I took a gap year, I would kind of fall off the radar and I wouldn't, you know, have that motivation to get into medical school. Now, mature me says, wow, if I went back in time, there's so many degrees I could have gotten in that year or so many, you know, things I could do. But I certainly don't, you know, regret my choices. I think that for me, it was the best decision at the time. And it's, you know, hindsight is always 20/20. So no gap year for me, but I think it worked well.
Okay. Were there any particular challenges for you in applying to medical school?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, like
it's a
lot of
students. It's a challenging process to begin with. Okay.
It is. Yeah. There's nothing easy about it. It's, you know, someone says, write a personal statement. That's what they get. Yeah. I don't know. What's a personal statement, you know? So that whole process is tricky and trying to figure out what your voice is and who you are as a student. And, you know, there's a lot of really incredible students out there. And I've always kind of thought, like, I'm not that incredible. I mean, I work hard, but it seems like there are, you know, students going over to Africa and saving entire continents on their, you know, applications, or they're always doing some kind of, you know, they've created a homeless shelter, and I don't know where they get the time or money to do that, but it's very impressive, but I never had any of that. And so it's, you know, it's tough. And I think in the application process, kind of thinking back, my strong points were my EMS for sure. You know, my grades, my coursework, and then the work ethic. And I think that was kind of visible through maybe some of the letters of recommendation.
Had you been involved in any organized sports when you were in college? I know you mentioned you were a swimmer in high school, I think.
Yeah. So there was actually no swimming in college where I went to at Albany, but they did have a club team. So I swam on the club team a little bit, just didn't really do it for me coming from, because in New York State, there's a couple teams that are kind of powerhouses. One of the ones is where I went to high school. We were state champions multiple times before and after I was on the team. So it's kind of a tradition there to produce very, very strong swimmers. Many go on to, you know, famous D1 swimming schools. So going to somewhere like Albany, it was nothing against the club team. It just wasn't kind of a good fit for me. What I actually ended up doing was coaching the club team. So it was kind of a leadership role. Yeah, because obviously, you know, coming from a program like that in high school, very experienced. And so that was really cool. I met a lot of cool people and I was able to kind of, you know, bring that club team up a little bit.
All right, great. Because I mean, one of the things that medical schools look for is obviously clinical experience that you had. But another one that they frequently look for is teamwork and leadership. And they can be, to a certain extent, flip sides of the same coin. And sports is one way that people frequently can demonstrate those qualities.
So. Yeah, absolutely. And I, you know, it wasn't just sports. I mean, thinking back, it's kind of funny as we talk, it jogs the memories, but we had a kind of a pre-health, it was called like a club, but it was like the advisement track that run by upperclassmen to kind of teach the underclassmen, you know, the ropes. So I was elected president of that and served on that for 2 years. So that was another pretty big leadership role while I was in college. I kind of forgot about that.
That's a good one. Okay. Now, you've taken about 5 years to go through medical school. You're in your last year now. Why did you do that? How did you do that? And are you overall happy you did so?
Yeah, so it's a great question. I'll answer the first and the easiest. Yes, I'm happy I did that.
Okay.
The question a lot of people ask is, why did it take you 5 years? They instantly assume that I failed something, which is, you know, far from the truth. I actually did a graduate teaching fellowship, as you mentioned at the beginning, in anatomy, and I like to add / ultrasound. I kind of added that bit on my own.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm really passionate about ultrasound, and we basically, it's a pretty unique program. We kind of add on this year, we do 26 weeks of clinical time and 26 weeks of teaching, and we do that twice. So it splits your third year, 26 and 26, each of the third years, and then you do a normal fourth year and graduate. And so what that allowed me to do on those 26 weeks was function as a faculty member, have research time, have, you know, office hours for students, do my normal teaching and all of those responsibilities, attend meetings and things. And so it taught me a lot about administration, taught me a ton about working with different personalities and students and I'd actually been teaching all through college. Even in high school, I was, you know, teaching swim lessons, teaching for the American Heart Association in college. And so that was kind of like a theme to me, was teaching. And so I was passionate about it. When I saw that opportunity come, I knew I wanted to have that job if it was an option. But with that job comes tuition forgiveness for 3, 3, and 4. Yeah. So it's a very, very competitive position to get. So it was kind of one of the things I figured I'll apply and see what happens. And hopefully, you know, I'll have a chance to do the job. And if not, I'll continue on, you know, the normal path. And so I was selected and it was incredible. Not easy. Definitely that last year was probably the hardest, watching all of my good friends that I did the first 2 years with graduate. So all my buddies are doctors now. But, you know, tuition forgiveness is nice. And what I was able to actually publish a paper on ultrasound and what I was able to teach myself with ultrasound has been completely invaluable. It's been incredible as a fourth year med student.
Are you considering at all like academic medicine or?
Yeah. So I've loved teaching. I always used to say, you know, maybe it was for me. And I think the more I've kind of rotated through academic centers, I just love the environment there. I love the teaching. And I love that it's a lot of, you know, challenging cases mixed in with the normal stuff. You know, a lot of the times those are those quaternary referral centers and you're getting a big catchment. You're getting a lot of really sick patients that have kind of unique problems. And you have all of the pieces to that puzzle upstairs that can come down and help you, at least in the ED, to kind of solve that and get the patients in the best shape that you can. So I do really like the academic side of things.
What have you liked best about medical school?
For medical school, for me, we'll take out the teaching fellowship portion. I think that I've really enjoyed, you know, all of medical school. I think I'm probably maybe an outlier in that. The first 2 years, for their own kind of uniqueness in that you have no job, you have no 9-to-5, there's nowhere you have to go. You can literally get up in your PJs, sit at your desk and just learn. And that's a really special time in anyone's life to be able to just learn for 2 years, have no responsibility, no job, nothing. So I enjoyed that and I had, you know, made great friendships and we always, you know, prioritized our work and carved out time to do fun things and made the best of it. And then I think obviously the third and the fourth years are more fun. You know, we come to medical school to do medicine. You need to do very well in the first 2 years to have a really, really strong foundation. And the stronger your foundation, the better you're going to be third and fourth year and the more you're going to enjoy that time. And so, you know, I've thoroughly enjoyed rotating and, you know, every patient you see, you learn something from and it's a lot of fun.
Great. What could be improved?
In medical school?
Mm-hmm. From your experience.
Yeah, it's funny because it changes. I think if you asked me that after second year, I'd be a lot angrier because you just take step one and you have all these things. You know, I think looking back, some of the things to me are just like clinical relevance. That was always something that even as someone who's instructing anatomy, I never saw exactly eye to eye with the department necessarily as someone who was purely clinical versus those who were purely PhDs teaching science. To me, it always, you know, we'd learn something and we'd learn it just because it was there. And I would say we'd learn something that has no clinical relevance. No one's ever going to ask you about that. And like, well, you should know it because it's there. And that's that fundamental difference where scientists and PhDs investigate and just generate knowledge because that's what they do. And physicians do that as well, but physicians need to clinically correlate things. And there needs to be, there's so much in medicine to know. You need to pick what's valuable and use that brain space effectively. And so there's, you know, it's in flux right now. There's a lot of change in medical school curriculum. Yes. And I think we're starting to see that where, you know, we're focusing on patient-based curriculums and disease-based and putting things in a clinical system base, exactly, putting them in that clinical context. And I think, you know, that is something that continues to improve and continues to need to be improved is just focusing in on what's relevant because medicine is only getting bigger. The rate at which we're doing our knowledge base in medicine. Good.
Right. And I would add that teaching in such a way where the relevance is obvious. When I understand it, it used to be that you'd learn something theoretical that was applicable to a particular system, but since they were taught separately, you weren't aware of that relevance immediately.
Right.
And my background in science is very poor, not to mention medicine, but sure. You know, that's something that I've picked up over the years.
Yeah, and it's, you know, from what I know of friends at other medical schools, it seems like my school actually did a pretty good job of making that clinical relevance, you know, there. It sounds like there are certainly some schools that are behind the times in that are just, you know, lecturing on miscellaneous science topics, and then they kind of get to step and they have no idea what's going on. So, yeah, it's a mixed bag, but I think it's certainly improving as a whole. And there's, you know, a lot of research in medical education right now. So that's kind of another interesting area.
I've been an admissions consultant for about 25 years, and it seems to me like there's been more innovation in the last 5, maximum 10 years in medicine than there was at any time previous from my perspective. There's a lot of innovation, a lot of change, experimentation, and hopefully it's all for the good, or at least it'll end up being good down the road. What surprised you about rotations? Or has anything surprised you? You had extensive clinical exposure before you got to medical school.
Yeah, I think surprised me probably in the way the question was intended, maybe is different. I don't think patients don't generally surprise me. That's not to say I don't get surprised. You know, I miss diagnoses all the time. Like, I'm a student, I make mistakes. That's not what I'm saying here. But, you know, I think sometimes people will be like, man, I can't believe this happened, or I can't believe they have blank. And that, like, doesn't, you know, like you said, I'd seen a lot of medicine before coming to med school, learning about it, and just knowing how it is in the emergency department, there wasn't a whole lot that was going to shock me. But I think that some of the things that have surprised me, honestly, would be the variability of your third year. And I know this is, again, it's school dependent, site dependent, but in your first 2 years, it's a very structured curriculum. You know, you know what to expect on the syllabus, you know what is expected of you in that course, and you are evaluated by a very expected test. It's kind of what you learned. Third year is not like that. And it's not that way everywhere. You know, some places have stronger and weaker clinical rotations, and I'm not blaming my school all on that. You know, like I said, there's a lot of variability everywhere, but you know, some rotations you'll be with a fantastic, instructor or preceptor. You'll learn a ton. You'll get a lot of hands-on experience. And then another rotation, you may essentially be shadowing the whole time. You know, and there's a fair amount of variability in what you're going to see. And so, you know, just as it surprised me that I get to put in a central line, which is, you know, an incredibly special procedure as a medical student, it would surprise me equally that I'd be sitting there shadowing in someone's office thinking like, man, I went to 3 years of school to be where I was as a pre-med. So it just depends. And that definitely, you know, probably also falls a little bit under the improvement category.
Right. And would you say that some of that depends on the individual that's kind of leading the rotation, or does it depend more on the nature of the rotation? I would assume that if you have a surgery rotation, you're going to be less hands-on than, because, you know, the risks are much higher than if you're doing, I don't know, obstetrics.
Yeah. So I would actually say it's not specialty dependent. It's very much person dependent. So, and as I said, I really don't blame it on my school. It's individual dependent. It has nothing to do with them. Some physicians are very comfortable teaching. They're very confident in what they do, and they're confident in the ability to instruct and fix any mistakes that a student could make. I've gotten to be very hands on some surgical rotations, and actually the rotations that I was alluding to for shadowing were actually office-based rotations.
Oh, really?
Where you were just talking with patients, and you know, that physician, for whatever reason, either had a bad experience with a student or whatever it was, just wasn't comfortable having students see patients on their own, and so that's what we did.
Okay. Now, was there ever a time in medical school, or perhaps even when you were working with the emergency medical services, when you thought, you know, I don't know if this is for me?
Yeah.
Maybe there was a bad outcome.
Yeah, I think to address the bad outcome off the bat, I have, I guess, a very strong belief that we do everything we can in medicine, or at least myself, that I always give a patient 100% of what I can offer. And so it doesn't mean that bad outcomes don't upset you, but I always know that when something does happen, that I was 100% there for that patient as much as I know how to give at that point in my training. And I think that has always kind of been, even since EMS up till now, helps you deal with some of the things that are out of your control, because the truth is, in medicine, we can't fix everything. And, you know, you can work hard and you can study and know everything, and you can still have bad outcomes that don't necessarily reflect, you know, a mistake you've made, just a course of what's going on. So I think that that is important to keep in perspective. And if you refresh me on the original question, I lost where.
I think you pretty much addressed it, actually. Was there ever a time when you had second thoughts about your choice?
Yeah.
One of the reasons would be because of a bad outcome. Another one might be because it's a grind. It's very hard. It's very demanding.
I would say to any pre-med students that may listen to this, it's totally normal to feel that question. Since med school started, I really pretty much felt at home. But studying for the MCAT, like right before I took the test, I remember distinctly thinking, I don't want to do this. I don't think this is for me. And it was pretty close to the test. And I knew I had to take it. I knew I was going to take it anyway, but I remember thinking, maybe I'll just take this test and, you know, not use the score. And so, you know, it's normal to go through that. It's normal to question things, but ultimately, you know, like I said, I wouldn't change what I've done.
Right. I know a young woman who became a child life specialist, and before she became a child life specialist, she was doing some volunteering that was relevant. And she became close to a young child who was in remission from brain cancer. And unfortunately, the child relapsed, and she kept visiting the child through on a volunteer basis, and the child deteriorated and ultimately died. And this young woman was heartbroken. And I thought maybe she would change her professional choice. And that was, you know, and she said, no. She says, I know I brought that child some joy. And that was worth it.
Absolutely.
So, you know, that's another perspective. Okay. So on a different topic, a little bit more fun topic entirely, you are a self-described fitness addict, and you also run See the MedLife, or the MedLife, which is on your t-shirt.
Yes, it is.
We're going to get there in a minute.
Sure.
How do you make time for all of this?
Everybody asks that. And I wish I had a magic bullet answer.
I'd love it.
I know. Me too. I don't think there is a magic bullet. I think the answer is kind of as it's always been with all of my hobbies. If it's something you want to do, you're going to figure out how to carve out time for it. I believe in living a balanced life. I think balance in all of the things we do is very important, in your relationships, in your school, and all that stuff. I would tell, you know, medical students a lot of times, you know, you might be able to get a 99, but sometimes a 95 is better for your mental health. And those 4 points aren't going to really make that much of a difference. And I kind of look at that in a lot of aspects of my life. And I think, you know, could I be a bodybuilder? Sure, probably, and do nothing else, you know, or a professional level athlete or something, but I'd have no other life. I'd be cooking all the time. I'd be, you know, on the treadmill, this and that. Or you can find the balance of fitness that keeps you feeling good in the rest of your life and gives you time to study and gives you time to do your, you know, whatever other activities you do for fun. And obviously there's sacrifices. Today being one, I didn't make it to the gym. You get out of work late sometimes, and that's the way it works. You do the best that you can. I would say the first 2 years of med school, it's very easy because it's very regimented. But third and fourth year, you definitely have to be more adaptive. And then, you know, the med life kind of falls under hobbies, I would say. Everyone, they say, like, has a book in them. I like to expand that to, like, everyone has a project in them. I think to me, this is kind of, you know, one of my big projects that I really want to give back to kind of medicine and medical school and med students, pre-med, and kind of all of healthcare. And that's what really drives me to do this. So it's definitely a lot of extra work. I laugh when I started doing this kind of thing. It was really small, like 10 minutes here and there. And now I call it my part-time, full-time job. So
yeah, that's what it would be. It sounds like it's a website and a business and social media. And actually, let's step back. You are the co-founder of The MedLife. What are your goals for the site? When did you start it? How is it going?
Yeah. So it is, it's going. It's launching officially 11/11.
Really? I thought it was launched.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
wow.
So there's the, yeah, so this is a little sneak peek for everyone.
Okay.
This logo is new, all of this. So the website, I sent you the link prior to, but the website is actually not the main focus. So our real focus is on YouTube and creating content on there. So we're really looking to bring educational, entertaining, motivational content to the YouTube space for basically all of healthcare, from the student level up through the practitioner level of, you know, nursing, dentistry, medicine, physical therapy, PA, all of that. And medicine should be a team effort. And it seems to me like everyone, you know, not necessarily in a selfish way, is kind of out for themselves on social media. They make their own account, they talk about themselves, and that's it. And the same with education. They have their own account, they talk about it, and that's it. Now, there are team efforts, and I don't want to, you know, downplay that, but there's not a lot of people that bring all of medicine together in one place and really reach outside of that normal hierarchy of nurse, PA, doctor, or NP, doc, you know, whatever is in there. And so that's kind of what we're aiming to do, is bring everyone together on YouTube to kind of enjoy, you know, entertaining and educational videos. And then, you know, we launched the website with it as well to have a blog to be able to kind of expand on some of those topics, bring on guest writers and other people that want to be involved, because it's a very supportive. The MedEd community is incredible. And that's really why I found this passion through social media. The people I've met have been incredible and very helpful to me. And so that's kind of why I wanted to grow this. And the blog kind of offers us a chance to have guest writers on as well. And yeah, the Instagram is it's a whole nother thing. It kind of grew on its own and do a lot of what we call like knowledge translation over there. So it's kind of a way for me to have a voice to, you know, almost 30,000 students, students and practitioners, and like I said, all across healthcare. And, you know, I really try and share both educational and motivational content on there.
So the blog is starting, you said 11/11, and actually this is going to go live 11/20. So it'll already be up. So anybody watching, once we finish the podcast, you can go take a look.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah.
And the URL is See the Med Life, right?
It's seethemedlife.com. And that's because we, you know, we're thinking like you see what the med life is like from all of these perspectives, from a nurse, from a PA, from a doctor. And so,
you also have a lot of video content.
So that's where our real focus is. And that's what's really launching on 11/11. We're rebranding the YouTube channel that I'd already been doing. By the time this comes out, it won't be a secret. We have five other content creators. As I said, we have a PA, a nurse, a PT, and a dentist. And so we're all working together to make content over there.
Wonderful. And are you accepting contributions from others? Are you open to it, or?
Absolutely. So I don't want to spoil too much. We have some really,
it'll be out. This is coming out after.
Absolutely. These are future plans. We're absolutely on the blog. We're taking, you know, lots and lots of guest writers. That's really one of my goals, is to kind of make it this collaborative space where, you know, if you're in medicine or pre-med or anything, and you have a nice story that you'd like to share, we would love to feature it and get that out to the readers. And that's kind of what we're hoping to be able to do with the blog. And then we have some cool ideas with the YouTube. One of our big things and reasons that we chose creators from all around the country is we wanted to show that, you know, the medical world is small, that we can come together across states, across countries. So we have an idea in the works to kind of help bring people that want to maybe do a video here and there, but, you know, are not necessarily part of our core content creators. So we'll see. That's definitely something maybe like the couple month down the road plan, but it's in the works.
Sounds exciting. Very exciting. Good luck to you with it all. How do you see your career? Now I'm talking about your medical career, not your online career. How do you see your medical career evolving since you're almost finished with medical school?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's actually like one of the biggest interview questions I get, because programs want to know, you know, who do you want to be in 5 years? Okay. And I think for me, that's kind of evolved into more of the academic side. I think, you know, I'd like to see myself practicing in an academic setting, at least for a bit. I really enjoy teaching. I get a lot of satisfaction from that. I would like to probably do a fellowship. So I'm looking to match emergency medicine this year, and that's a three or a 4 year residency. I have a couple 4 year programs that I did add into the mix. They generally, you know, you may not have to do a fellowship coming out of there. Otherwise, for many of the 3 year programs, you know, even though they're very strong as well, to be an academics, they generally like some type of a fourth year. And so being that I'm very interested in. Ultrasound, that's on the list. Medical education, you know, simulation med-ed fellowship, maybe EMS and kind of come full circle and do medical director. There's a lot of really cool options in EM. There's, you know, you can do administration and get an MBA. So kind of keeping the doors open, but definitely interested in staying, you know, in an academic setting.
Very interesting. Okay, great. What would you have liked me to ask you?
That's a great question. I always like to ask people their favorite food. I think it gives a lot of insight into
All right,
into
what's your favorite
styles.
Food?
I'm a sushi guy. I love sushi.
Okay, we just had had some last night.
I'm jealous. Yeah, I'm actually planning a trip to Japan. That would have been another good question. You know, every year I try and do some kind of a trip. I'm big on the credit card miles. I'm very crafty about getting the deals with those. And so this year's trip is going to be to Japan and Thailand. So I'm really excited about that.
Right. My sister actually just came back from Japan. She went to Japan with her husband in the spring. And she said, fantastic. The pictures were gorgeous. Really enjoyed it. So when are you planning to go? In the spring
also?
It will
be like late winter. I wish. We're going to be doing like late February, early March. I think that I got to look at the dates. But
no, she was a little later. She was a little late. And he said Thailand also. Thailand, I also said, is also gorgeous. So, right.
That's what we're hoping. Yeah. A little bit of kind of the culture shock in Japan and then go kind of hang out on the beach in Thailand. So,
that sounds fantastic. All right. Adam, I think we're just about finished. I want to thank you so much for sharing your story and insight and being so generous with your time. Where can us find you online and learn more about you? I suspect it's going to have something to do with MedEd, but maybe you can give us the URL.
Absolutely. The easiest way to find all of, you know, socials from Instagram to YouTube to our blog is just going to seethemedlife.com. That's S-E-E like you would with your eyes, because for some reason people always want to put the letter C there, but S-E-E themedlife.com. Yeah, I don't know. So it's just S-E-E themedlife.com. You'll be able to find everything over there.
Okay, great. We're going to link to See the Midlife as well as other resources related to this podcast from accepted.com/339. Listener, thank you too for joining Adam Goodkoff and me for Mission Straight Talk's 339th episode. And now a final reminder and a favor. First, a reminder, don't miss the 5-part framework for successful medical school application, which you can register for at accepted.com/339webinar. And the favor, if you find this show worthwhile, please leave a review on iTunes for Admission Straight Talk. We have links to iTunes in the show notes at accepted.com/339. Thanks again for coming. This is Admission Straight Talk, and I'm Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.